I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. On December 20th, 1999, the Vermont Supreme Court handed down a ruling that helped change the landscape for same-gender couples around the country. In its landmark decision, the court said that the state of Vermont could not deny same-sex couples the legal rights their opposite-gender peers enjoyed through marriage. The decision, authored by Chief Justice Jeffrey Amestoy, stated, quote, "The government goal of promoting a commitment between married couples to promote the security of their children and the community provides no reasonable basis for denying the legal benefits and protections of marriage to same-sex couples." But the court did not legalize marriage for gay couples. Instead, it left it up to the legislature to decide within a reasonable amount of time whether to expand the rules around marriage or to create a parallel system that conferred equal rights but wasn't called marriage. When the legislature convened a few weeks later, the issue was front and center, and Vermonters were torn. In January of 2000, constituents packed the State House to deliver public testimony on marriage. Round after round, citizens were given 2 minutes to speak their piece. Hundreds pleaded with lawmakers to either right an injustice or to preserve what they saw as the sanctity of marriage.
It concerns me that without traditional marriage intact, the children of our state will be victims of confusion and a lack of a strong standard.
The question is not only should they be allowed to marry, but are gay and lesbian Vermonters worthy of respect and acceptance?
For centuries, marriage between a man and a woman has been the glue that has held societies together.
As a woman living in a committed, loving relationship with another woman with whom I am raising her two sons, I live a secretive life out of fear.
And would ask that this body of lawmakers not bend to political pressure to legitimize this behavior by calling it marriage.
For most of the session, testimony and debate continued. In March, on the floor of the House, Representative Bill Lippert, a Democrat from Chittenden County and the only openly gay rep in the State House at the time, shared his perspective.
I am deeply appreciative of the work of my committee members who listened, who struggled, who came to hard-reached decisions that it's the right thing to do. Passing the bill that the House Judiciary Committee has brought forward will not end discrimination. It will not end prejudice. It will not end hate. But it will grant rights. You may argue about whether they're civil rights or other rights. But I'll tell you this, they're rights that I don't have right now. And most everyone else in this chamber does.
But Representative Nancy Sheltra, a Republican from Derby representing Orleans County, was vehemently opposed up to and beyond the day of the vote when she said this.
I will not support the legalization of sodomy, the tearing down of traditional marriage in this country by the passage of this law. I believe that we are really putting ourselves in a dangerous situation in regard to a judgment from the Almighty God. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The bill, legalizing a separate but equal set of rights called civil unions, passed by 7 votes in the House and was debated in the Senate, where it also passed. A day after it had made its way officially through the legislature, then-Governor Howard Dean signed it into law in a private signing on April 26th. Though the state government had a mandate from the Supreme Court to pass legislation, and Dean had said he would support it, he had also expressed ambivalence, saying, quote, "It makes me uncomfortable, the same as anyone else." But after the signing, he spoke to the historic nature of the legislation.
I choose to sign this bill because I fundamentally believe that it's the right thing to do. I also fundamentally believe that in the long run, this is the right thing to do for the state of Vermont and for the United States of America. I believe that because until every human being is treated with dignity, because they are a human being, and not because they belong in some category, then every American and every Vermonter is poorer because of that.
Vermont became the first state to legalize civil unions, and the divisions created by the legislation reverberated around the state. Take Back Vermont signs proliferated. Some legislators, particularly Republicans who had supported the bill, found themselves out of a job when the November elections rolled around. 20 years later, so much has changed. And yet, Today we're going to remember the Baker decision of 1999 and reflect on where things stand today with some of the people who were involved from the start. Nina Beck and Stacey Jollis are one of the three couples who sued the state as part of the Baker lawsuit. They're here in the studio with me today. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for having us.
And Stan Baker was also a plaintiff in the case, along with his now husband, Peter Harrigan. The case bears his name. And Stan, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Nina and Stacey, when you think back on that time and hear that tape and, you know, the sounds that you will remember from 20 years ago, I'm just curious what you're feeling right now. Nina?
It's a little bit overwhelming to remember some of the things that people said, particularly the more vehemently opposing views. I do remember sitting in that state house and just kind of having it wash over me and being jubilant when people who were on our side spoke up, and being sort of unbelieving when people spoke in opposition of us.
Stan, what do you think and feel hearing that tape?
It really took me back to that time. I've often told people that sitting in the well of the House during those public hearings, which were amazingly well attended, even in blizzards, our job was to look dignified, to not overreact, and to listen. Listening to a lot of people telling you how horrible you are can be taxing. And I told people almost jokingly that I learned to put up this plexiglass Leviticus shield so I didn't have to hear those quotes over and over and over again. And I'm a spiritual religious person, so I believe something entirely differently. But still, it can soak in. And yet it was an incredibly impressive process to see Vermonters from both sides showing up and expressing their views as deeply as they did.
You know, all of that sound comes from the debate in the legislature over civil unions and questions early on about whether the legislature should move forward with marriage rights or something mm-hmm. separate, which is obviously what it became back then, civil unions. But this all came about because of the lawsuit that the three of you were involved in and because of the Supreme Court's decision, which said the state legislature had to do something and had to do something that conferred equal rights. So, Stacey, could you take us back to when you and Nina got involved in suing the state, and why and what motivated you to say, not only do I believe I deserve these rights, but I'm going to put myself forward in this very public and very difficult way?
Well, when I listened to the quote from Justice Amestoy that you just played, he talks about the children. And for me, it was very much about a contract that legally protected our child at the time, Noah. And then later, when the Supreme Court, Vermont Supreme Court decision came out, our second son, Seth, was just a month old. I remember sitting in the legislature with Nina and I holding our son and listening to testimony saying, this will be dangerous for the family or something. And I thought, well, it's only going to protect our family.
Can you talk a little bit more about that and why having children really motivated you? Because Vermont had earlier on in the decade codified rights for adoptive parents, including same-sex parents, so that there were rights. And I believe that you had taken advantage of those to make sure that you were both considered the parents of your children. But why was marriage something that was going to confer more rights and be important?
Well, that's right. We had done a second parent adoption with both our children. So we had each, Nina and I, a connection legally to our children, but we didn't have a legal connection to each other. And there are rights and responsibilities as a family that then don't confer down to our children. So just from the perspective of would I be able to pass on my Social Security benefits to my partner in order to take care of my children, I would not without marriage. So that became a very important piece for me. To me, growing up queer in the 50s, 60s, 70s, I never thought that marriage would happen. It never occurred to me that I would want or need the state to sanction my relationship. But once I had kids, that really changed my feeling about it.
Michael just posted, there was backlash. The Democrats briefly lost a majority in the legislature. To its credit, the legislature did what it needed to do to implement the decision. Stan, what about for you and for your husband? What motivated you to get involved in this lawsuit?
I always like to remind people that the reason we got in the lawsuit is because we fell in love. And we wanted to have a way for our friends and our family to come together and celebrate that, but also to celebrate there was a legal connection between us. There are probably over 300 laws statewide and over 1,000 laws federally that pertain to marriage, and we wanted to have those protections. What we were asked to do, all three couples, because the lawsuit had to be based on something, was to ask for marriage licenses in our towns in Chittenden County. So Peter and I went in June to the Shelburne town clerk, asked for a marriage license, and were very politely denied, as were Nina and Stacy in Burlington and Holly and Lois in Milton. That was the basis of the lawsuit based on the Common Benefits Clause of the Vermont Constitution that says nobody can have a right that someone else does not have. Then in July, the lawsuit was launched and made its way through the Superior Court. Here in Chittenden County, Judge Linda Levitt found dismissed six things but found for one thing, which was the state's interest in procreation and child rearing as something was, that was important. And that's really what the Supreme Court was considering.
Right, because that quote that I read from the Baker decision, which said, you know, if the state says this is about preserving homes for children right. to have safe and secure homes, there is no basis for discriminating on the basis of the gender of the people who are involved.
Exactly, because 90-year-old people can be married. Opposite-sex people, and clearly they're not going to procreate. People who are not able to have children can marry, and they're not going to procreate. And also with adoption and surrogacy and artificial insemination, there are all kinds of ways that people can have babies in our culture now. So really, the gender of the couple was no longer the deciding factor.
Nina, Stacy mentioned that your son Noah was very small when you got involved in this lawsuit, and I want to remember Noah because he was a really important reason why you got involved. Can you tell us about him? And he died during this process.
Yes. Yeah, so Noah was born with a congenital heart defect in February of 1995, and he lived a rich and full life. He did start to have more symptoms as he got to be a little bit older, 2 years old, he started having symptoms. And we spent a lot of time suddenly going to the hospital, which we had not really done much of earlier in his life. And we did spend several weeks in Dartmouth and then several weeks in Boston. He would have needed a heart transplant. That's the only way he would have survived, and he did not live to see that. But he was a powerful motivator for all of us. He was kind of like a little Buddha child. He was a very old soul, and he had very sparkly eyes, and he drew people into him. So people were kind of magnetized by him when he was in a room. And when he died, we were asked, you know, do you want to continue with this? And we both said, absolutely, yes. You know, we started this not just for him, but for another child we might have and for ourselves. And we definitely wanted to continue. And it became a bigger part of our lives, actually, at that point.
Were there moments through Noah's illness where you thought about the differences that there might be if you were legally married or had the legal rights of marriage?
Oh, absolutely. Starting with when he was born. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure, yeah. We, of course, had the foresight to know that we needed to put together legal power, health care, power of attorney, and things like that. So when Nina was in crisis and we were in the emergency room when she was getting ready to give birth, they, of course, stopped me at the emergency room door. Now, if I had been a man, they never would have asked for my marriage license. It was only because I was a woman. And thankfully, I did have the paperwork in my back pocket in the middle of this emergency situation. But another thing happened when Noah died, and we had already done that second parent adoption. So I was legally Noah's parent. But the person who was in charge of issuing the death certificate would not put my name on Noah's death certificate until, thankfully, a friend of ours basically just said, put her name here, and where it said father's name. But that kind of battle for our children was ongoing before the marriage lawsuit and continued through it.
What did it feel like to have your name there, but to have to fight for that right to then put it, excuse me, in a field that didn't even apply to how you felt as Noah's parent, with the father field?
Well, I'll actually offer a correction there. Both our children have always called me Papa.
So it did feel okay.
it felt fine. This is maybe an aside, but I never wanted to be the other mother, the less important non-biological mother. I wanted my own role. And Nina and I talked about that as we were planning kids. And we decided that parenting, being a mother or a father, is a role, not a gender. Mm. And so I took on the role that best suited me, which is the father role.
Hmm. Stan, when Nina was saying that Noah served as this sort of sparkly person who in some ways really buoyed and bolstered all three of your couples as you moved through this process, you were nodding.
He was amazing. And watching Nina and Stacy be his parents was amazing. And I think, obviously, their loss cannot be compared to the rest of the plaintiffs, but we really felt that loss. And it was incredible to watch them take a breath and grieve and stay in the lawsuit. And I'm really, really grateful that you did. I wanted to say, as an aside, we had a fundraiser for the Vermont Pride Center on Friday at the Burlington Center for the Arts, and Nina and Stacy's little son Seth was there looking so big and so mature and so confident. He's now a student. Well, I'll let you say, but he's now a student in college. And it's amazing to both remember that grief and their strength in that and then see Seth.
And Seth, moving. You mentioned, was something like 1 month old when you were sitting in the legislature in January. Yeah. So Seth has moved through this entire process through the course of his life.
It's been his whole life. In fact, he is, as Stan mentioned, a sophomore in college now, and his college essay was about, you know, I didn't grow up watching TV, I grew up being on TV. Because when he was a month old and our photos, all six plaintiffs and Noah are on the cover of every newspaper, I mean, I'm sorry, it was Seth. That happens. when Seth was on the cover, he was just a month old when that December 20th decision came out.
Joseph Watson is the preservation manager and archives associate at the Special Collections at Middlebury College, and he writes to say, just 20 years on, it's already historic. I wanted to mention the archive of the Vermont Freedom to Marry organization is hosted by Middlebury's Special Collections, and we invite anyone with unique memorabilia like photos, letters, or other things to consider donating them to the archive. And he posted the email specialcollections@middlebury.edu if people want to reach out. Let's go to James, who's calling in from West Lebanon, New Hampshire. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much. Yeah, 20 years ago, I was a young man. I was I had just been married, and was living in the Woodstock area. And as a heterosexual male, I recall all the controversy and the divisiveness between people. And what really struck me, I guess, is at least a couple of times a week, I had to drive by this enormous barn. And somebody had the back of the barn faced the road, and it was a pretty much a main road. It was busy. And they actually took the time to paint Take Back Vermont along the whole 40 feet of this barn in letters that were probably 10 feet high. And it really saddened me and it angered me. And I recall the different sides, you know, people saying, you know, we just want what everybody else has. And the other side saying, you know, no, this is un-American. This is ungodly. This is sinful. And I remember, I just recall thinking, you know, this is no different than a Protestant saying to a Jew, you're wrong. Hmm. You don't have the right to your beliefs.
James, I appreciate that perspective. Thanks for sharing it. We got a note from Mary who says, I had lived most of my adult life in the closet and luckily was working at a great company during this period. It was heartbreakingly difficult, but I think the decision was so much stronger after allowing people to debate and question. Our neighbor in Craftsbury was farmer and state rep Bob Kinsey, who ended up losing his Republican seat over supporting the bill. My partner and I had recently moved into our old village home. Within 3 weeks, big signs saying Take Back Vermont showed up outside our windows. Thanks to Bill Lippert and the heroines pushing through this historical bill, now look where we are, with trans and gender fluid people being accepted. So both listeners there reflecting on Take Back Vermont, which, you know, was a remarkable thing that started happening. And Take Back Vermont was sort of already out there, but really that movement became galvanized after the civil unions legislation. And I'd love to know, Stan, you know, how you reflect on that. Our caller saying this troubled him as a heterosexual married person. Our listener, Mary, saying she moved in to Vermont with her partner and suddenly there are these Take Back Vermont signs in her, you know, windows. She can see them from where she's living. And for people who are growing up today, they may not even remember what that felt like to see that in Vermont.
I think the Take Back Vermont movement was an extension of the people who so strongly felt that same-sex marriage was an evil thing or a bad thing or would somehow make the sky fall, which obviously it didn't. And I think those people still were feeling quite wounded after the civil unions bill passed. So they started this Take Back Vermont movement. And as several people have said, I think 6 or 7 legislators, Republican legislators, lost their seats. And these were brave people like Marion Milne of Central Vermont, who spoke beautifully about why she supported same-sex marriage and how she couldn't think about responding to her children and grandchildren if she didn't support it. Tom Little did not lose his seat, and he was co-chair of the Judiciary Committee. He's the only Republican that Peter and I have ever had a fundraiser for. John Edwards of Swanton lost his seat. These are real heroes. I think that there was, as you've said and others, there was a shift in the legislature in the House in that election right after civil union, and the majority was lost to the Democrats. Then they got it back. And one of the things that we have felt very strongly in the Freedom to Marry community was change is built on relationships. And we must all tell our stories to neighbors, to friends, to business associates so that they know that they know somebody who is queer or gay or lesbian or bisexual, trans. Because it's so much harder to say, I hate Peter and Stan, that is to say, I hate fags. Because one is this awful thing people say, the other is people they know. And so we all spent a lot of time during the civil union 3 year time from the time the lawsuit was filed until the decision, meeting people, going to churches, going to town halls, just being out there speaking so people would see a personal face. I think that's the same thing we did during that couple of years afterwards during the Take Back Vermont movement. We kept on talking, kept on meeting people, so it wouldn't feel so frightening, because I don't think we're frightening. So it was weird to see those signs. On the other hand, I just like to say one more thing. We are in a similar time now in our country of really frayed nerves, of people finding it hard to talk to each other. And I would like to just recommend what we did in the Freedom to Marry movement, which was to tell our stories, meet our neighbors, and listen to their stories. And if there's mutual listening of stories, some of that tension goes away. So I didn't see that as a really bad thing back then. It was hard to see. But it was an important debate because people didn't have to pretend anymore. And I think if people can listen in the same way now, we might be able to move forward.
Stacey, what do you think about that? Because there's also a push these days to say people in marginalized communities or people of color, people who are non-binary, queer people, shouldn't have to explain everything, shouldn't necessarily be the ones charged with doing the work that Stan is talking about and that that you did do and sort of felt like you had to do, whether you wanted to or not, as part of this movement, you know, that idea that you should be out there and explain things and answer questions that might not be polite at the very least and might be coming at you 10 times a day. So how do you see, you know, what Stan's talking about today?
Well, I very much appreciate what Stan said. I think one of the other reasons that we really felt we needed to go through with this is because we could. We were not risking our family relationships. We both, Nina and I, have very supportive families. We weren't risking our employment situation. We had the ability to go forward without losing when so many of our queer and gay and lesbian trans friends and neighbors could not move ahead and be open and talk without losing their relationships and their families or their employment or anything else that was near and dear to them. So we felt very much an obligation to do it because we could. And I agree with Stan, particularly with what's happening right now. It's so important to not stay isolated in our little bubbles, whatever that bubble might be, but really to try to break out of our bubble and keep talking. So I appreciate this opportunity to keep talking about what happened with the Baker decision, to talk about any of the anti-Semitism, racism, transphobia that's going on today, because I think by raising this conversation again 20 years later, that's really what we're doing, is raising the current conversation again as well.
Let's go to Bob, who's with us from Athens. Hi, Bob.
Hello. How you doing, Jane?
Good. Nice to hear from you. What do you want to talk about?
Well, we have a lifelong, many-year friend, family friend who was lesbian. And she used to live in Vermont, ended up moving to Massachusetts before the civil unions thing went through. I had strong concerns about gay couples and marriage. I felt was important to be fair, but I also had problems with children. They got married in Massachusetts. We attended it. At the reception, they had adopted two, a boy and a girl, at a young age, had adopted two children, along with two male gay men down in Provincetown. They had a wonderful wedding. And at the reception, the two children, adults now, stood up and spoke. And what they shared about growing up and what was so obviously a family full of love, I was so ashamed, and I could not answer the question of what was wrong with civil unions and gay marriage when they create such wonderful families, which we so sorely need in our communities. And I thank my lucky stars that I lived in the state of Vermont that took the first step towards that, however painful it was. Well, and I thank you for hearing this.
Bob, thank you for sharing your perspective. And goes right to what Stan was saying. You know, Bob had these reservations about children raised by same-sex couples and then new people, Stan. And that, you know, that changed his mind.
That was incredibly moving, Bob. Thank you for that. I wanted to say something from the point of view of the male couple, Peter and I. It wasn't that it was harder for us, but I think it's – don't want to get too much in the weeds of stuff here, but – it was there was a large, stronger reaction, particularly from the religious right, to two men being together than the women, which I think is actually a vestige of misogyny. It was saying the men are more important. But also I think there's a religious element about men shouldn't be together. In fact, Peter and I had our names on the website of Fred Phelps' Westboro Baptist Church from Topeka, Kansas, and under our pictures it said Vermont fag beasts and all the horrible things that should happen to us. They did not pay much attention to the women, which again I think is it says something about misogyny as well. The only reason I'm saying that is that there were really some hard times, but we all stuck through that. And kept telling our stories. Peter and I even went out to Nebraska to speak at a college out there, and what they really wanted to know was sort of about all of the religious parts. But and we kept coming back and saying, this is civil. But our stories are so important to overcome some of those old biases. And Bob said he wasn't for it at first. And it's very moving to hear his journey, and I thank him for that.
In a few minutes, we want to talk as well. We've got listeners and callers who want to talk about where things stand today and some of the fights that are ongoing for civil rights, and particularly for trans and non-binary people. But Nina, I also want to ask you, thinking back to the Baker decision, you know, what my understanding is of what you were angling for was marriage rights. And the Baker decision comes out and says the legislature can figure out what it is. It has to be the same rights, doesn't have to be marriage. And then the legislature ultimately passed civil unions, not marriage. And, you know, we are going to jump ahead to today when marriage is the law of the land. It is federally mandated. But at the time, what did you feel about this idea that what you were being granted was a civil union which was not marriage, was supposed to convey the same rights. Now, whether culturally it did or not was another question. But what did you think about that?
Well, I think it was pretty clear that culturally it did not convey the same meaning and all of the same rights and privileges at all. You know, I think it was a very mixed time emotionally. It was definitely progress. It was, you know, steps on a path, but it was not what we were totally after. So there was jubilance that we had achieved some rights and some status, and there was disappointment that we hadn't gotten marriage, and that we did think at that time that marriage would come at some point, and it would maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, turned out to be 10 from that time. But there was some disappointment there that we didn't get the full marriage.
Does it now, as you reflect 20 years on, feel like that was a step that was necessary to get people closer, or do you still think it should have been marriage?
I think that's very hard for me to judge. Of course, I think it should have been marriage. I understand that not everybody was there, and I understand that it was a large leap to marriage, and that taking it to civil unions was a lot more palatable and easier for a lot of people to handle it. So,
Stan?
Susan Murray told a story about herself and Beth Robinson driving to the press conference when this came out.
And these were the attorneys fighting for you.
Two out of three of the attorneys reading the decision, which is many, many pages long. Did we win? Did we win? And one of them saying, well, not really. We got this beautiful statement from Justice Amestoy, but we didn't get married. And I was privileged to be on a panel a couple of weeks ago at Norwich University. Denise Johnson was there, who is the only Supreme Court justice who held for marriage and not giving it to the legislature. She was asked directly if we, the plaintiffs and the Freedom to Marry Task Force, who had a big meeting that January to decide, will we accept civil union or will we say, no, that's not good enough, we need marriage. She said, had you done that and said you had to have marriage, it's not definite that the Supreme Court would have given you marriage, which was actually, after the fact, helpful to hear, because we've always wondered, had we said, yes, it has to be marriage. And the legislators, including Bill Lippert, have said there would not have been support in the House for marriage. So I think, as much as it was disappointing, I think it was probably a necessary step. And I take heart in that Vermont was the first place, not just in this country, but in the world, where there were equal rights and responsibilities for same-sex couples.
And we're hearing from some of you as well, like Francis, who says, in 2001, my daughter came out to me as gay. I realized at the time that one of my dreams might not happen, and that was to walk my daughter down the aisle for her marriage. However, because of the efforts by your guests and the forward-looking effort by Vermont, civil unions, and then marriage was legalized. This was done while hearing opponents say the family structure would fall apart. Well, my daughter is now married to the love of her life and very happy. She will make us grandparents in a couple of weeks. Their baby will enter an amazing, loving environment and be part of loving and caring family. Thank you all, Francis says. And we're also joined now by Justin Marsh, who grew up in Lamoille County and has vivid memories of the news coverage and atmosphere around their community after the decision. Justin now works for the Pride Center of Vermont, which held a celebration of the Baker anniversary last weekend. Justin, it's nice to have you on the program.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
Can you talk about, you were, I think, 10, you said, when the Baker decision came down, and what that was like for you as a child?
Yeah, so I was 10. I grew up on a dairy farm in Cambridge, and it was just a whole different beast. I didn't know. This taught me what gay was. That wasn't a term that we used in our household. It wasn't something we talked about at the dinner table. So when I brought it up, I just remember, you know, an era of negativity and then knowing that that wasn't something that we were going to talk about. So I just continued to exist.
How did you reflect on that, though, as you were growing up and coming to sort of try to figure out your own identity?
Yeah, well, it was difficult because of the Take Back Vermont movement. And I told a story on Friday about how there was a barn outside of my high school that had a Take Back Vermont sign. And so being, you know, as out as I felt comfortable in my high school, but still, you know, out in a sense, and then still seeing that and knowing that, like, maybe I shouldn't be, or maybe I should make sure I am only out to people who I know are going to support and accept me. And I think that that was, in general, really difficult for a lot of folks who grew up in Vermont and it was just so interesting to have progress and then also to know that you can have this progress and you can be out, but then get ready for, you know, as Stan had told me before, the lid to be taken off the homophobia. It's going to be there. So, yeah.
What about with your family? I mean, you mentioned that the Baker decision was the first time you really heard vocalized the word gay, and it was not seen as a positive thing within your family. So then as you're thinking about who you are and how to talk to your family about that, did that change over time?
Well, my family, we don't talk about things, so it really worked out well for me. I just existed, and tough questions never came because we didn't have those conversations. But I know that my situation is not the same as everyone. But yeah, I think that it was just all very interesting. I could say that it was helpful to have all of this sort of paved the way. It maybe was a easier pill to swallow in a lot of ways as time continued to progress as well.
Yeah, we're looking here at the Baker decision 20 years on, and we have some listeners and callers who want to talk about what now and what today. Glow is calling in from Johnson. Hi, Glow.
Hi. Thanks for your show and your call. I know Stacy and Nina from back out in California, and I came out back then, and I moved to Vermont because I felt like I could move here and be out. I ended up working at the Department of Aging and Disabilities and then working with elders mostly, and I felt it important to move rights forward because as our communities age, we have all those rights still that need to happen as we are aging with partners, not to be separated. It's the same with the transsexual movement right now. We cannot stop our vigilance. So, again, I want to say hi to them and thanks for your courage in pushing forward and that we need to keep at it because Trump and his administration aren't letting up either. Thanks.
Glow, thanks for your call. I also want to read a note from @LoveCrossbones, who identifies as a trans girl and tweets, 20 years ago, my state legalized civil unions. It should have been marriage. I was there, though, fighting and marching. All I can think now is that you got yours, cis gays. Where are you now for the T's? We helped you. Help us. Did I hear some recognition there for that Twitter handle? And so what now? I mean, there has been conversation about this, that there were people who were fighting for marriage, people who were fighting for marriage equality, who say, are you going to help me now? You know, are you going to help me with certain things? And Vermont has passed legislation relating to things like the ability to change your birth certificate or the ability to change your passport. But, you know, I'm curious from all four of you, what do you think about now what and where does this momentum go 20 years on? Stacey?
Yeah, I agree very much with what the caller said. I think that I have been a lifelong member of a social justice movement as the daughter of a Holocaust survivor, fighting for the rights for Jews and against anti-Semitism, and then coming out as a queer Jew and fighting for my rights as a queer. And now the transgender movement is powerful, and I feel like I want to be standing right there speaking my truth. I think, you know, I think about my son, and he's 20 years old, and he still says Papa, and he'll call out Papa, you know, in the grocery store across the way. And he and I watch the heads turn and look to see who Papa is. And I just think that is part of social change, just living our truth openly and out.
Justin, what about for you? I mean, you work in this field now, too, and you're working still to push forward with rights.
Yeah, I think so. The Twitter comment was really resonating to me because we do see this. We see people who, during our Pride Parade, walk up to us, you know, TERFs, are, you know, very angry at trans people. And it's just so, I think we really need to come together as a whole community. And I think Stan touched upon this as well. Progress, we need everyone at the table to be on it, and as many people as possible. You need to count those votes, right? I need to bring it back to the state house. So for me, I think that we need to continue. We need to all be all together. I think the trans folks are the people who are going to be, it's the next wave. Progress is needed from everyone in the LGBTQ community.
Socially or legally or both?
Well, both. I mean, a lot of it is we're seeing that trans folks are getting a lot of their rights are sort of on the chopping block, and we need to make sure that those are protected and upheld. And so if we have this ability to come together over a topic, then we need to be ready to do that. And the divisiveness within our LGBT community is what will hold us back from that.
Well, there's certainly more to talk about. And, you know, this is the sort of the start of the anniversary cycle here for the Baker decision, which came out on December 20th of 1999. But then all of the legislative conversation afterwards leading up to civil unions, and then, you know, 10 more years through the marriage debate. So I hope that we can continue to talk about this on Vermont Edition. And I want to thank the four of you for being a part of this reflection today and bringing us back to 1999 and even earlier, and to your role in what is now a pretty important Vermont history. Justin Marsh is Communications and Development Director with the Pride Center of Vermont. Justin, thank you.
Thanks.
Stan Baker and his husband, Peter Harrigan, were one of the three couples who were plaintiffs in the lawsuit against the state of Vermont that challenged the state's refusal to grant same-sex marriage. That lawsuit ultimately went before the state Supreme Court bearing his name. Stan, thank you very much for being on the program today.
It's my great pleasure. Thanks.
And Nina Beck and Stacey Jollis are another of the three couples who sued the state as part of the Baker lawsuit. Nina and Stacey, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
I want to mention as well the third couple who we did not hear from today, but who have been very involved as well, Holly Peterbaugh and Lois Farnham.